All right. Welcome to A Course in Miracles. Have I got some reading work for you guys? So there is this wonderful spiritual metaphysical discussion that A Course in Miracles has throughout the book. It's one of its vectors of teaching, I call it. I don't know how many there are. There's maybe seven, there's maybe 12, but there's one day I will figure out how many ways, vectors I call them, Jesus uses to tell you the same thing. There's one message in your spiritual awakening. But of course, because we are so addicted to separation and to being bodies and to staying asleep, we will ignore and discount entirely some really, really simple, beautiful teachings that would just wake you up were you to take them in entirely, right? And so we have many, many paths to the one truth. And A Course in Miracles, this is kind of fun seeing the streets of San Francisco through Jason's.
Yeah.
So A Course in Miracles has more than one path built into this book. That's one of the reasons why it reads so difficult, where you have double negatives, where you have paragraphs that you read and you say, what did I just read? I kind of got part of it. I liked a few of the words, but together it doesn't mean anything to me. Has that happened to you? Where you're reading and you got some amazing paragraphs, but you're just not quite sure what. Yeah, that's because in that paragraph, there were multiple levels of teaching in the one paragraph. That's how you know. That's how you can witness them. And you'll notice from your own marks and writing on the side of the page, year after year, you see the paragraph and you have a different comment. That's because you're changing and the book is meeting you where you are. There's multiple levels of consciousness, of teaching, in A Course in Miracles in many of these pages. So one of the methods that A Course in Miracles tries to use to describe the impossibility of the ego. Look. If you really knew, if you really, really, really knew that you were dreaming a dream, the gig is up. True? Is that fair enough? And that's another one of the vectors is dreamer dreaming and you're asleep. And were you to awake, then you would be fully enlightened and aware. That's just one of the vectors. But it's too hard to believe, isn't it? It's so simple. But it's a vector that's easily ignored as being too abstract or not specific enough for you to use. Yeah. Well, another one that we're going to look at tonight, it's really powerful. It's as powerful as the dreaming analogy, but like I say, if you ignore the dreaming analogy too easily, maybe this one you can't. After we spend some time on it together, maybe you can't ignore this particular vector. And it is cause and effect are one. That's one of the metaphysical vectors of A Course in Miracles. It may be elsewhere. I haven't seen it. But it's throughout the whole book. Jesus treats it as obvious, but he knows, just like the dreaming analogy, it's, you know, how obvious is that? Once you've awoken and seen the dreaming mind, then it's really obvious. But if you're asleep, there is no proof for you that you're not dreaming, you know? It seems like this is life. So we have to approach it from whatever vector to meet you where you are. So cause and effect are one. That's the teaching. So, like I say, we're going to dig into this tonight, but let's just spend a few minutes thinking about just that simple phrase. Allow it to come into your awareness. Allow your Holy Spirit to coach you on this very simple sentence. And we'll see what comes out of me. I'll throw in a few words along the way. But really, this is it, folks. This is one of the super powerful vectors of awakening that Jesus has chosen for you, which means you have chosen for you. If you're reading this book, you have chosen what's in it. So.
Wait a minute.
Oh, brakes are on.
What's the sentence? What's the sentence that I'm supposed to use?
Yes, yes. How is it that cause and effect are one? That's the teaching. That is the challenge. That is the question. Spoiler alert, that has the answer in the question. But it's probably far too simple for our separated minds to really ingest. So hold this in your mind and let it teach you as we go along. How is it that cause and effect are one? Thank you, Barbara. A Course in Miracles says, many places, many ways, but often it will say this, cause and effect are one, or cause and effect are not separated. It'll say this, and then you'll see that it'll quickly veer away from going any further, because this really is a cliff that is sufficient on its own. No more teaching is necessary. So I ask you, invite your Holy Spirit to counsel you. How is it that cause, you got that, the cause, and then the effect are indeed one? How is it that cause and effect are one, are not separated? This idea that cause and effect are not separated is a logical imperative. It's a truth. The ego needs there to be a difference between cause and effect for the ego's world of separation to be true and self-proving. But that cause and effect are not separated is a truth, one the ego cannot tolerate, but one that would bring you perfect peace were you to understand how true it is. When I say logical imperative, it's true even in the ego's world, because it's an effect of mind. So even in the ego's world, you cannot separate cause and effect. Pick an example, even a mundane example. Teach yourself this truth. It is a truth. One that you already know, and perhaps it's time to put it into words and close the circle in your mind, or it's one that you will know, because it is true. and you cannot tolerate illusion forever. You will rest in truth. This is your awakening. How is it that cause and effect are never separated? Look closely. It's true on all levels of existence, except for complete denial. And even that, you can see the circle. If you look. And finally, if you wish, I would like you to offer to the group something that came to you. If anything came to you, you can say pass. Always you can say pass if you're uncomfortable. But maybe you got some insight to help teach us how it is that it's impossible for cause and effect to be separated. Let's just spend a minute. Corral your thoughts finally. This is the kind of thing that could lead you to a sudden awakening. This is the kind of thing that could lead you away from the depths of the ego addiction. If not your awakening, this is a kind of thing that taken in will put you firmly on your way out of darkness. That's why I say it's one of the vectors of A Course in Miracles, one of the metaphysical teachings of A Course in Miracles that's throughout the book, that you could take and absorb, and you could have a spiritual ignition, I call them. You may or may not on this, but you may. Timothy, I got your mute. Do you have anything to share with us about how it is cause and effect cannot be separated?
If they were separated in truth, there could not be any continuity in what I last perceived myself to be to this current perception of what I am to any future perception of what I am. That evolution, that change wouldn't be something I could point to as a valid reason for why I didn't at some point not exist and why I don't have to fear going to non-existence.
Very good. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, buddy.
Right. And time, it seems to me, is actually, although we can't imagine being without it, it can be perceived as a great curse. And I mean it in this sense, that cause and effect do not always seem to us to follow one right on the shoulders of the other, that there are intervals of time. Now, sometimes cause and effect can follow boom, boom, and I say boom, not facetiously. If you hold a pistol to your head and then, you know, pull the trigger, the cause and the effect happen pretty quickly together. Okay, there's not a lot of, you know, guessing, gee, did this cause that or was it something else altogether? Yeah. But on the other hand, we do things that do not, you know, we put in place causes that do not seem to have their associated effects for half a lifetime or longer than that. And so that makes learning difficult for animals, for hominids even, for 21st century rational minds.
Well, the key thing that you're describing is it's another wonderful section. One day we'll cross it. Maybe we'll get there tonight. Probably not. Where it talks about the gap. A Course in Miracles uses this term, the gap, describes what Tim is talking about. where the ego would like to have an interval where it is a victim and it's not responsible. It's called the gap. It's just an artifice. Tim's saying, no, 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 no. There can't be a gap because you could run and hide there. You could be a victim there. You could be out of control there. Julie, you might, if you're with us.
I'm here.
I would recommend you mute and spend at least 2 or 3 minutes in meditation on how it is cause and effect cannot be separated.
I will do that. Thank you.
Great. Welcome. She popped in my head while we were meditating. I thought, where is Julie? And then she popped up. Yeah. Ross, what can you tell us about how cause and effect? It's impossible. It's impossible. Anything occur to you? Let me get your mute. I got you.
I was waiting for that. So I went a couple of different ways. One was your inward world is what your inward state of mind or world is what you project out, and then you utilize the senses in the brain that you made to perceive it. So, yeah, they're all the same thing. It's all what you made. You made your inner world, you made your outer world, and then you made the senses in the brain that perceive it and interpret it.
Yes. It's all. There's the circle of projection, and you indeed, your perception is an active, a very active involvement. Perception is not passive. Things do not happen to you. You have to look at it and decide. Is that my son? Oh, no, that's some kid with the same color hat. You have to do all this work. And so and that's true for everything. You're right. Very good. So you're so actively participating. If you look and you see how active you are all the time, very good. You can't escape it.
Yeah, you've got it. Instead of like the Ken Wapnick talks about the decision maker, I said, well, wait a minute. It's also a gatekeeper because you decide what to believe. You let it in through your, okay, I'm going to believe this and I'm going to believe that. And then you find out you're totally wrong.
Yes.
You decided to believe something that was totally, based on scientific facts.
You might have spent years defending it out of pride.
It's like so arbitrary.
Yeah, yeah. Course calls the past in chapter 28, calls it selective perception.
Yeah. So I had an example from one of our fine movies, Star Wars.
Hey.
Okay. So Yoda sends Luke into the cave and says, what will I find in there? Only what you bring with you.
All right. Thank you.
So he goes in there with his lightsaber, your weapons, you will not need them. He goes in there. He sees Darth Vader, the object of his fear, right? Attacks, chops off his head. The head rolls several feet away. The mask burns away, and Luke's face is under the mask. He's attacked himself because of his fear
of
what himself.
Very good. There's a Bruce Lee movie that is centered on Bruce Lee's own fears as a child. And he was small, scrawny kid, and he felt insecure, and he was pushed around too easily. He was afraid of being hurt. And so he started to learn martial arts. And to his surprise, he found peace. He fought less because he didn't have to fight. Before, he had to throw things and kick and scream and hope that he would do some damage and then the other people would run. Now he knows that he does not have to run, nor does he have to fight. It was an amazing movie showing the peace that came to his certainty. and he did not have to fight. And he got more and more peaceful, the more competent and capable he became. That's just the certainty of being able to choose not to fight. It was an amazing message to me. Michaeline, I got your mute. What can you tell us about cause and effect are not separated?
Well, there were three specific things that came up for me. One was that as I perceive, I will experience. There's no separation from what I'm perceiving and what I'm experiencing. The idea of breathing one breath, whether it's inhale or exhale, it's all one. And then the other thing was that what is.
Nice. I like the visual from the breath, because you know that's a great thing that seems like
we label it as it's being a cause and effect, but it's really one thing. Yes.
It's need for air, and its satisfaction for air comes from the need for air and the muscles contracting for the air.
And it's all working as one. It's one thing.
It's not two. It is one transaction. Very good. Beautiful. Now that leads me to the beautiful message in Course in Miracles about communication is like your breath, because your breath appears to be two separate things. But communication, where you give some information or you receive some information, and when you're properly communicating, your receiving turns into a giving back what you received. And the breath operates in the same way. It's got this circular cycle. So very, very interesting. Thank you. Very good. Mm-hmm. I got your mute. Luann, tell us something about how cause and effect cannot be separated.
Well, I got here late because I'm in the middle of moving, and you can see the green color.
You're painting your wall. You're choosing between colors.
I just got home from my other house, and I'm in my new place. So I came in when you were talking about the circle, and my first thing that came in my mind was mind, because what I believe is we all are just as we're one Son of God, I think we all have only one mind. And the closer you are to somebody, that's the cause, the more you are in touch with their mind, or the mind that they are sharing with you, I should say. So that's where I started, and pretty much where I ended.
Okay, well, that's very interesting. I like what you framed that. You put it into relationships. And you said the closer you are to somebody, the closer you are not to their body, not to their appearance, not to what they said, but to their mind. The closer you are to somebody, you can understand their intent, even if the words are exactly backwards. Isn't that true?
And not only that, but, you know, we communicate that with our mind. If we think something without doing anything about it, it seems to me like it happens. I think I I need to talk to my daughter, and she calls me in about 2 to 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So she's, in a sense, in touch with my mind.
Close.
Yeah.
Close. Yeah. 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 I'm not alone. The effects of my thinking and seeing is literally true. And it's on the continuum. And it's more true in some instances than others. But yeah, it gets pretty wild.
I do want to say one more thing that I remember came up. Now I remember. Today I was moving. I was stressing out. And my behavior went along with my stress. And then I thought, you know what? Why don't I just do it and not think about what I'm doing?
Yeah.
Well, it turns out, if you don't think about what you're doing, you can still do it.
Oh, my God. That is so true. You, that's the difference between pain and suffering. Suffering is thinking about the pain, which is suffering. The pain is just pain. It's quite neutral. It's exactly neutral. It's when you think about how bad it is. We say in the presence of one who just had pelvic surgery. It gets worse when you worry about it. It gets worse when you anticipate that the pain might be there even a minute from now. It's worse. As you think it, so it is. Very good, Luann.
I was talking to a neurosurgeon about a few months ago, and he was talking about taking a growth off of my pituitary gland and what it would involve. And I was thinking, I don't really want to know all that. I don't want to have to think about it in a fearsome kind of a way. I'm just going to do it if you tell me I need to.
Well, that's a form of trust. That's an open-minded trust. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. That's just fine. Good, good. Yes. Oh, well, you said so many things. I forgot what I was going to zoom in on. But thank you. Very good.
Okay,
Judy, I got your mute. Nope, pass. Okay, very good. Sundari, would you like to talk to us? I got your mute. Talk to us about cause and effect and how they cannot be separated.
Hey, well, it was interesting, too, that for me, the dream analogy is the most natural of those two. You know, even when people ask me about the Course in Miracles, mm-hmm. I immediately go to the word non-duality, and then I describe the dream. This is just like a dream.
Yeah. So
that's the natural one for me.
It's throughout the book. The dreamer analogy is throughout the book.
And I think it's a great one. At least
absolutely. I love it.
But so, and this is a harder one. So, first of all, it's my beliefs projected are the world. And I actually personally believe, whether it's true or not, it's useful for me to believe that every thought I think is like a tossing a pebble into the pond, creating ripples in creation of effect. And I believe in the benevolence of that, no matter how it looks, because there's nothing but God's love here, and I'm that, and everything else is as well. And so when I get a weirdo situation happening, and the one that I thought of just lately is the guy that did the fuck you, dance. Die dance.
Yeah.
My neighbor who did the fuck you, die dance. All of the while.
Turning his head upside down as he emphasizes the words.
Yeah, it was really amazing. Every time I walk by his house now, I just have this big smile, and I remember him doing this amazing. And it was the first moment of my entire life when someone sent negativity to me that I did not feel it one iota. And so I think that every circumstance that we encounter is a gift to ourselves awaiting acknowledgement. And that the useful question I find when I get the car stolen or the flat tire or the injury or the is what gift am I possibly giving myself in this?
Nice.
Out of my victimhood into my own empowerment.
Always, 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 with no exception. Course says a short little sentence, and all of the sentences in A Course in Miracles can be taken literally. It's amazing. If you understand, if you look at the context, if you're confused, you'll see that there aren't wasted words in this book. But the Course says that you are the author of your experience. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you were done. And so by looking at what world vision am I blessing myself with moment by moment with each thought, and knowing that heaven is truly here now, each thought I give myself is the choice of happiness. I mean, it's the point, it's the pivot where I can choose to be in the Garden of Eden.
That a girl.
In the now.
Yes.
Time, which is judgment for me.
Yes.
I can be in the pit.
Short sentence, all things are for your good, period. All things?
Not only that, it's me that's gifting myself with them.
Wow. And they come through you. Beautiful. That means you don't have to wait. If you want to go where the water is, you know, in your house right now, you all know the nearest faucet in your house. Think about it. Think about it. Kitchen, maybe. Nope. Hall bath, right? I mean, somewhere is the nearest water source in your house. This is what Sundari is saying, is that what she's seeking comes through her, through the choice in her mind. What is she seeking? Is it peace? Is it joy? Is it understanding? Is it the opportunity to love? Is it the opportunity to see the face of Christ? Like you would go directly to the closest water in your house. Now you recognize that this spirit spigot, this source of spirit, is no further than your own mind, closer to you than your heart. That's a great, good, good. Not separated at all. Very nice. Thank you, Sundari. Deborah, you want to talk to us about how cause and effect not well, separated?
Yeah, I was, wow. So I was thinking about the idea that if this, then that, and it seems like it's all predicated on time, which doesn't exist in as the ego thinks of it. So if there's only this moment, then there is no separation of cause and effect. It's just, like you said, the circle. It's just it's this moment, and then it's this moment. So that was what I came
up with. Hey. There it is. There is the teaching. It's another one of the vectors of A Course in Miracles that ties very closely to this. Is time, the myth of time. And it also in chapter one talks about time and space actually being the same thing. But it drops that thinking, well, you're not going to go there with me. But you're on it, Deborah. You can take the absurdity of time. Time is an absolute invention. There is no physics principle that describes time as a law. It's all relative. You have to smoke it up and then believe what you just smoked. First, you got to roll it, and then you got to smoke it in order to have it. Time is an invention. So very good, Deborah. You can take that to the bank. You can always fall back. You can, if it works for you, if it's comfortable for you, you can always fall back on, wait a minute, there's no time. And come right in and include everything you're thinking into a single instant and then see how cause and effect are simultaneous. And see how in order for you to be unhappy or worried, then there would have to be some other time where whatever's happening to you manifested or got worse or was painful or whatever. And always, always in the exact present moment, you're fine. You're absolutely, in fact, if you really get into the present moment, you're blissful, joyful even. As you wander out of the present moment, you can have other emotions that are not your true nature. But you know this, if you ever had a holy instant where you stepped out of time, maybe it was a meditation, maybe it was some kind of, if you play music, or if you're a writer, or if you make stuff and you had a success and you go, wow, you actually stepped out of time for a moment and you came very, very, very present as you received your present goodness. This is your true nature. You just accepted it for a moment before you started doing the self-criticism thing. Time, Deborah. Yes, absolutely. That is a vector, a solid, solid awakening path to follow and guide. And you could practice stepping out of time. You do that. You do that from time to time in your meditations. Do you find yourself stepping out of time? Super in the present?
I do. And it's so fleeting. And sometimes I want you to just spend the whole evening talking about meditations. Like, how can I stay there?
Quick tip. If you're trying to stay there, you're thinking too much about time. Eternity and infinity have no dimension. So just think about resting with that instant. See what happens. Yeah, you bet. Yeah, we'll have to do a big time thing or even a meditation. That would be really cool to do a meditation focus. What do you got, Sundari?
Well, just 10 minutes before I came in online, I was an hour on a Zoom with my friend who's in fourth stage lymphoma, chemo, with a, you know, lost all her hair, and she's in hospice. She's very close to dying, and she's just ecstatic. I mean, there was like no fear. I mean, zero. And she was just, you know, it was just like the joy of seeing each other and being together. And it was kind of amazing being with her because she had energy that seemed like mine right now. I mean, it was just so up and so positive. And she was so out of time.
Yes. Yeah.
She's at the very, very, very end of her time, but she was out of time. And it was so phenomenal.
Yes. See, very free. Like, very freeing. For somebody who is really, really close to the edge, I've had a few situations where I thought my life was going to end any minute. And I just found myself, I was giggling. I was literally witnessing my last breath, and I thought, this is how it ends? And it was so simple because with her and the cancer at an advanced stage, or Julie can talk to us about people on their deathbed, when it's so inevitable, everything is so simple. It's so wonderfully simple. And all the pressure is gone. There's no pressure. It's just one more breath. How's it going to go? Yeah, absolutely. Good, good, good. Yeah, it's fun. Thank you, Sundari. Barbara, I got your mute. You could talk to us about, if you're still there, talk to us about how cause and effect cannot be separated. Maybe she went off to go find the nearest water source in her house. Jason, I got your mute. Talk to us about how cause and effect cannot be separated.
Well, two things came to mind. First of all, you can't have cause and effect because there is no time. That was the first automatic response. But I was thinking, you know, the ego is cunning, baffling, and powerful. I remember a conversation reading about, this is a very interesting concept, that we're living in someone's idea, and it's the past. Like, the building I'm in is actually the past. I'm living in the past. I'm living in someone else's idea, in a sense, but the whole game of it being past and future. And I thought what was interesting about past and future is the power of blame. Blame is always in the past.
Blame.
You get to use time to make someone feel guilty or thankful or blah, 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 blah. So it really is a great mechanism, creation of the ego. That's my simplistic view.
Yes, yes. Very good. It's all in the past. It's very good, Jason. Goes right along with Deborah. And as you witness the relative world, not only are you, as Ross was describing, actively participating in it, but whatever it is over. It's over. Right. So that's another one of the vectors of A Course in Miracles teaching, is all about the past. And our ego addiction deals in the past. It perceives in the past. It judges in the past. It feels guilty over the past. It only knows what to fear because of the past. It has to look it up in the book called The Past to find out how do I feel. And the past, one thing you can't take away from the past, you have to admit it, is the past is over. Wait, if it's over, but then you have to invent how it has tentacles reaching into some other time like the future or the present. Very good. Made up, made up, made up. And literally, 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 you live in the past. Your brain actually has to wait for signals from parts of your body to arrive to make it seem like you're in the present. When you're walking, if you're 6 feet tall, it takes about 200 nanoseconds for the signal from your foot to get to your brain. That's 1/5 of a second. That's starting to be real time, right? But your eyes and your ears pick up sound much quicker, like the footfall, for example. So what your brain has to reconcile the sound of the footstep and the feeling of the footstep, and they're not occurring, they're not arriving at the brain at the same time. So how does it do it? The brain loops in a little delay. A little delay, naturally, so that all things will congeal and be observed at the same time. I mean, you live in the past. You really live in the past.
You know, it was interesting. I was talking to a gentleman from MIT years ago, and he made money on the time between you made a transaction at Safeway and the time it went through at the other end. This trillionth of a nanosecond, that's where he made money.
Wow.
Time is money.
Okay. Julie, can you talk to us about cause and effect and how they cannot be separated?
Yeah, I wasn't here for the meditation, but I tried to kind of do it. I think what came up is that there's like the wrong-minded thinking, which is this is happening to me, and right-minded thinking of I'm doing this to myself. And in that, my thoughts are both cause and effect. So for me, that's how they are not separate. But then I thought, well, gosh, I want to go even beyond that, because this idea that all of this is not reality, like, made me sort of wonder what that meant in the context of this question. And I guess that's like the one-mindedness that Luann was talking about, where it's no longer the this. There is no this, and it's oneness. So those were some of my initial thoughts.
Good, good, good. And if there is a this that you're concerned about, because doesn't it happen in life where suddenly something gets all your attention? You know, maybe it's tough pain in your back, or a pain in your wallet, or a pain in your relationship that gets all your attention. There's a this. This shows up. And then it's oh so more important to start to check in and see the circle operating in that with those particular details in that moment. And then you can start to back away from being a victim inside the moment and not get so caught up in it. Yeah, good, 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 Julie. Very practical. Okay, let's dig in and have Julie.
Can I ask a question?
Oh, yeah, please.
It might not be a brief answer, but you have said a couple of times that time and space are related. And I'm thinking that we kind of understand time, most of us, in some form or other, that it's from the past. If anything we're thinking is from the past, anything that's happening is already past. So I was thinking, if there's no space, then we can't exist. If there's no time and there is no space, then between my shoulders, for instance, that's not, it's not there really. not there if there's no space. That makes me believe that this is a dream. If there's no time and there's no space, and that makes sense to me. Space is a little harder, but, you know, it's not impossible to believe there's no space.
Did you know that all of the humans on planet Earth, roughly 8 billion humans, if you took the space, what we understand with physics, without going, you know, way off into the quantum world, right? Let's just stick with simple high school physics with the atoms. If you took the space away, it's very simple math. All humans would fit into 1.5 sugar cubes. Did you know that? Do you know that? It's easy math. It's easy math if you look at the how much vacuous is each atom and how many atoms by how much people weigh. That's it. It's simple math. It's 1.5 sugar cubes. And then if you go further into quantum physics, that becomes yeah. Jacqueline.
I'm going to use that. That's great. What a concept. What a concept. But I wanted to share what I experienced when I was considering there's no separation with cause and effect. So I went to the one, and part of that was the present moment, that there's only the presence. This, in fact, a moment even says like it's time. So it isn't even moment, isn't even the right word. But
of course, uses instant.
Yes, instant. So in the instant, so the instant and the oneness. So those are the two things that came to me. And I had read some about the reversing effect and a cause in this line, the father is a father by his son. And that was just in my mind. And so from there, I don't know, I thought, well, you know, there's this idea that the Father created us, we're creation, we're the child of God. But if there's no time, there couldn't have been an instant of time that we were created. We're eternal with the Father. I mean, I was just, I don't know, somehow it took me to that. So if you can say anything about
that. I can. Try this visual. Just sometimes I do this with a meditation. I'll just tell you. Time and space, okay? And how they are co-joined in the same and how it works. It's very much like, look at a water fountain, you know, a fountain where the water is coming directly up and it falls back onto the fountain. Can you visualize that? The water comes up the middle and it falls back onto the fountain. Flows over the fountain. And the same fountain pumps the water back up, bathing the fountain once again, and then continuously and constantly. And so what appears to be happening to the fountain is happening by the fountain. And we know that it is a fountain because of the fact that there's water falling on the fountain. And so the fountain is not separate from the water. And it's certainly not separate from the water falling on it. And the fountain is fully engaged in the water, shooting up and falling back onto itself. So it's very much self-referencing. Yes, Sundari.
So God and I have the same birthday, and you do too.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like
eternal.
That's the oneness, because
It's the oneness. Each takes the other to exist. The water by itself is water. It is not a fountain. The fountain without the water is a block of cement. Who knows if it works at all? But time and space dance, and water and the fountain dance to make the fountain. I got this from another one of these Zen-type koan things that just hit me hit me like a firecracker in my hand, and I just had to stare at it, meditate on it. It was very simple. But, and Tim, maybe you know where this comes from. I think I know where this comes from. And it's not Zen. It's another of my favorite teachers. But here it is. I'll give it to you like this. God is because I am. I am, of course, because God is. But God is because I am. Isn't that beautiful? I had a spiritual awakening just on those words. Take it into meditation sometime. It just rolls and rolls and rolls, and the exact relationship of extension and being, creator and created, cause and effect are not separate. You just feel it. And of course, then you read Course in Miracles, and that God is because I am. Remember chapter 15. It says, God is an idea. It also says, God has no idea of you, the earth, your worries, your cancer. This is not something God could know anything about. Isn't that interesting? It's a challenge. It's part of your, it's another truth that you have to reconcile. And because the book is so beautiful, you know, one day it could be your release. So, you see, as you give, you receive. It's the law of love. It's the law of mind. It's the law of truth. Course also says that your function is perfect happiness. There's another absolute that if you look at very carefully, you will see the only divinity has anything that could be even called perfection. It says that there's no joy. God has no joy without you. You are God's joy. You're the verb. God is the noun. The fountain. The fountain spews water, wetting itself constantly. The two are in a dance. God is you manifest. You're the verb. God is the noun. That's all. There's no limit. There's no limit because you are extension of God. It's just that you've been dreaming of a very small little dark spot. That's all. There's power in that too. There's plenty to be done with that too. Just like I like to say in Hollywood, you can go onto the Mary Poppins set and there's a woman who's floating on an umbrella helping anybody she meets. But she's, you go to the next studio and there's somebody with a chainsaw cutting off somebody else's head. The same tools make Mary Poppins floating and singing on an umbrella. The same tools make, you know, what would be considered the opposite. But then when you back up and say, oh, that's movie making, it's all the same. You are now, you have now transcended movie making. And any judgment required. Do you see? You see the sameness in the movies, not the differences. You understand them all at their essential level. Cause and effect actually are not separated. Barbara, can you talk to us how cause and effect are not separated?
No.
That's a fine answer. No, that is a fine answer.
I've been in and out. I'm on chicken duty tonight. I had to let the chickens, make sure the chickens were in. So I've been kind of in and out. I've been listening. with great interest, and you're really all like on another plane right now from where I've been. Really interesting. I was catching, because I was having to walk around and do a bunch of stuff, catching the discussion about death and the joy, Sundari, I guess, of your friend, and Andrew, you're saying that you've had those moments when you thought that was it. Last week, I was so in this course, and then regular life happened, and it just, it was like a deep dive into the ego land, and I'm aware of the course the whole time. I'm comforted by it, but I'm in total ego space. And I haven't been able to get out of that, really.
Went back into the bar and they served drinks. No surprise.
Yeah, exactly.
Alcoholic in the bar. Went into the ego, and the ego gets angry. It gets mad. It gets worried. The ego gets unfairly treated.
But I still have the external witness.
Good. You know, good.
Like watching yourself be in that space.
You will never lose that, Barbara. Everybody celebrate with her right now. And Barbara, you too. You will never lose that witness. You have been a child who is growing your entire existence, and as a spiritual practitioner, as a spiritual seeker, you are constantly growing. You do not go backwards. You can deny what you know, but you cannot lose it. It's just like building a muscle. The muscle memory is there. Or riding a bicycle. You may have learned difficultly with scratches how to ride a bicycle. And then 20 years later, you think, I can't remember how to ride. It comes right back to you.
Yeah.
So you won't lose it.
Really well put. And I appreciate that, and I understand it. But, you know, there's those moments of clarity. And, you know, like last week, I think I was saying, you know, I just understand that you just make a decision for guiltlessness. And I was talking to Jason about that. Well, I've thought about you about 3, 4, 5, 6 times, Jason, because in the meantime, I haven't been able to access that at all that was so accessible last week. So it just all depends on what's going on in your life. The course is always with me, no matter what. But I get into situations, and I just want to go into this detail for just a few minutes. Last night, I was going to go to the meeting, but I was really tired, and so I decided to make myself this hot drink. I'm on a special diet, and I have this hot drink, and just sit down and enjoy that and read. I was too tired to go to the meeting. So I sat down, I started drinking my drink, and 2 minutes later, I was completely covered with hives from my feet to my face. And talk about all of a sudden being a body, you know? And I was just terrified. I'm 67 years old. That has never happened to me before. With any kind of food or drink or anything else. And I was just terrified, and I'm still in the hangover of that experience. And yet, you know, I'm wrestling with all the things about being a body. And then, you know, Sundari, your friend, being full of joy and presence at the brink of death. And I mean, I was nowhere close to death. I was having an allergic reaction, that, you know, and it was scary, but it really just went along with the rest of my week of being very much in ego land and then being in fear. And so, and then I'm hearing this discussion that you're having, which is far away from the hangover of that experience. So, you know, I know I'm going to process it all. And I know this course is just teaching me way too much. It's, you know, I kind of thought that I would do a lesson a day and go through it. And at the end of the year, I'd be done with the lessons. And it's just like nothing close to that.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, too, that will take the course so seriously because it really is helping them, like it's helping you.
Yes.
And you don't want to miss anything. And so you may take weeks on a single lesson. I mean, that happens with a lot of people.
Right.
And, you know, I don't dissuade that because, you know, take what you can, of course. Yeah. I do recommend you try to power through it at least once and see the whole thing. And,
yeah.
And this will help, might help blow you through some of the stumbling blocks just by seeing how this road actually is connected.
Yeah.
This path that it's laying out is connected.
Well, that's what I'm hearing tonight.
Good,
among
good.
All of you, I'm not there, you know, but it's encouraging, and I've been, my ear has been in there, but I'm sorry, I don't have much to reflect on about the cause and effect thing.
No problem at all, but just know this, and you have given us the gift and a chance for all of us to celebrate on our own lives and paths with A Course in Miracles and other spiritual gains that you have made. They are permanent. You cannot lose them.
Yeah.
One way you can lose them, though, is trying to go back and relive them. Nasty little trick of the spiritual ego says, I had it, and I'm going to go back to it. Yeah. This is a nasty trick of the ego. It will eventually make you doubt you ever had it. So, you know, always stay present and always allow the present good, the present awareness to be your next holy instant, and not reliving something of the past.
Being here is really important.
Good.
I love hearing what everybody has to say.
Good, good. Thank you, Barbara. Jason has got something profound to say. I got your mute. Let us have it.
I was just curious because in the Course in Miracles, it says, go back to your father. You know, go back, you left. You left the happy place that once was, but then you never left. So I'm getting confused now. A little bit of cognitive dissonance. Can you help me out before I think?
Yes, yes, yes. So there are many levels of teaching in A Course in Miracles, and in the early couple of chapters, it does talk about you know, leaving your home and such things. But you know, those are helpful. And if you look at the context, you'll see that again at a different level. Even the same words that seem to imply time are implying your commitment to your reality now is a departure from God. Now. You left now. You didn't leave sometime in the past. But the first time you go through, it's probably helpful to say, yeah, long ago I really effed up. And it'll take me a long time. And it uses these words that you could spend even longer trying to get back. It uses these words to help ease you into a path of a seeker. But if you keep it up, it will dissolve that concept of time. It will bring it absolutely present. It's your next, you know, time or two or three around. It just keeps taking you up. Same words, same sentences. Yeah. Good, good. Jason, you can keep bringing that back. You know, you can keep bringing that question back if it frustrates you, and be happy to talk about it again. And it's really fitting tonight, too, because you know, cause and effect are not separated, and people have said this many times, that one of the ways to see that cause and effect aren't separated in an obvious way is to see that time doesn't actually exist. The past, well, it's over. It may as well be a dream because you're only trying to remember. I just heard a study on the radio. They took the, remember the Challenger crash back in 2009, I think it was? Horrible, right? And that we had the first female, she was a teacher, and she was on board the chat, and the damn thing blew up. All hands were killed instantly. And they were trying to figure out, you know, what happened and who did what and where. And of course, you take statements from everybody involved on right away. People were interviewed and, you know, what happened? What did you see? What did you do? And the build, the people who are responsible for building it and prepping it and pressing the go button, everything else. So now, you know, over 10 years later, they interview them and they ask them what happened. And they say what happened. These people say with certainty because they were there. It's the biggest event in their life. Some of them feel responsible. So there's a past event. And they say, here's exactly what happened. I'll never forget it as long as I live. And then you take out the piece of paper that says, you know what? I have a copy of your sworn statement the day it happened. And it did not happen that way. This is what you said. And they'll say, no, give me that. I'll tell you what really happened. They don't remember. The past is so over. It's such a fantasy. You got to stop believing in what you think. Don't believe everything you think. It's a bumper sticker that I have. It's not on my car. It's on my refrigerator. Don't believe everything you think, especially in this world where the past is selective perception that's completely skewed. You didn't say what you thought you said. They didn't understand what you thought you said. You didn't really say what you thought you said anyways, and you didn't mean it the way you said it, and they didn't understand it the way that you said it, and they didn't want it to mean what you wanted it to mean when you said it. So other than that, what is there to hold on to?
That's the story of my life.
Lighten up and get present. You will always find the truth and the ability to communicate in the present. You only live in the present anyway. Sundari.
Well, what you're saying is just so true. And each time you access the past as well, it's like you leave fingerprints on it and it changes it.
Right. It changes it.
So you're constantly changing the past.
It literally rewrites the memory.
Exactly. And you can even get a person, and there's a series of tests they do where they implant false memories into
them,
doing it a few times. And very, very easy. And we do it all the time. And we can undo our whole past into a nice past.
Yes.
The way that I know that is when I was, I left my career when I was attacked by a student from behind. And the workers' comp said, sorry, but in order to have a counseling session about this, you need to have a 6-hour psychiatric session to decide if you're worthy of counseling. And when I talked to my judge friend, he said, what they're looking for is somebody who's had a nice, lovely life, and that just this thing happened. And so for 3 weeks before this session, I practiced and practiced retelling myself my life story.
That's great, Sundari.
So I worked it so that I could have this 6-hour session convinced of this other history. And the night before the session, they called me and they said, we've changed our mind. We're just going to give you the counseling you want. You don't have to do this. But what I realized was this new story of my life, which was happier, was just as true as the old one and made me happier. And I never went back to the way that I recited my history.
That's it.
Like anybody at any time can have different parents than they've had by just giving themselves it.
It's never too late to have a happy childhood.
Exactly. In truth.
You're dreaming it up. and you are dreaming it up, and then you're dreaming it up. Folks, thank you, Sundari. Very good. Absolutely good. And you people, you're doing it anyway. Sundari did it as a lucid dreamer. She actually looked in and decided what was going to be true. And then it started to be unfolding to be true. But we're doing that anyway. You just need to be aware of it. Thank you, Sundari. Wonderful, wonderful example. Okay, we have any time left? She is. Okay, I really want us to see this fantastic section. First, I'm going to read you the critical words that we are studying, and I'm going to have the course support, and they are this. I am responsible for what I see. I choose the feelings I experience, and I decide upon the goal I would achieve. And everything that seems to happen to me, I ask for, and I receive as I have asked. This is a challenge to your ego and to your desire to accept the truth. It is a placeholder in the book that actually hints at many levels of teaching. And tonight, with our 7 minutes left, we're going to look at one of the wonderful, wonderful places that Jesus lays out in the responsibility for sight, one of the keys to understanding the responsibility for sight is on page 592 in the text. This is chapter 28. Boy, it's going to take us 3 years to get through this chapter when we get there. There's so much in chapter 28 that's just metaphysical. So look at 592, section 2. And Tim, when you get there, would you start reading for us? I got your mute. Reversing Effect and Cause. And by the way, look at that title. It doesn't say cause and effect. I often do the typo, cause and effect. But you see, the ego reverses cause and effect. And then the Holy Spirit's going to come in and swap it back. So he's going to take the effect and he's going to switch it back to being the effect.
Yeah, that role reversal is very typical of what the ego looks for as it comes here.
Yeah, so don't miss that reversal. It's part of the teaching right there in the title. Please, Tim, go ahead.
Without a cause, there can be no effects. And yet without effects, there is no cause.
Can you see the circle? It's the constant circle I'm pointing out all the time. Go ahead.
The cause, a cause is made by its effects. The father is a father by his son. Effects do not create their cause, but they only establish its causation. Thus, the son gives fatherhood to his creator and receives the gift that he has given him. It is because he is God's son that he must also be a father, who creates as God created him. The circle of creation has no end. Its starting and its ending are the same. But in itself, holds the universe of all creation without beginning and without an end.
Oh my God, is this so Course in Miracles or what? Can you stand it? Tim, would you read for us for emphasis sentence 5 again?
With joy. It is because he is God's son that he must also be the father who creates as God created him.
The circle of creation. Okay, and Ross, I got your mute. Yep.
Maybe I won't say anything because it's not that important. We've only got a few minutes left, so go
right,
ahead.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks. We can always chat after, let's kind of see what we can get. Ross, go ahead and give us wonderful paragraph 2.
Fatherhood is creation. Love must be extended. Purity is not confined. It is the nature of the innocent to be forever uncontained without a barrier or limitation. This is purity, not of the body. nor can it be found where limitation is. The body can be healed by its effects, which are as limitless as is itself. Yet must all healing come about because the mind is recognized as not within the body, and its innocence is quite apart from it, and where all healing is. Where then is healing? Only where its cause is given its effects. For sickness is a meaningless attempt to give effects to causelessness and make it be a cause.
Touching again on another one of the teaching vectors throughout the book about the mind and the body, and that the mind is not in the body. And you notice he used the word purity a few times? Please keep your finger here. Flip to the front of the book. I want you to see Miracle Principle 7. After Ross's reading, I want you to see this. It's in the front of your book. You know, you read the principles when you first pick up this book and you go, what the heck does that, well, they're pretty words, but what do they mean? Well, here's an example of where it's actually calling out the purification that must, you must, M-U-S-T, must do. This will not happen to you. You must do this. You must do the preparation of your mind, your kingdom. What am I talking about? Miracle Principle 7. Miracles are everyone's right. Oh, good. Thank God. Right? Comma. But, record scratch, fine print. But purification is necessary first period. Oh. Sobering? Just stating the obvious to him. You are so loved that even your dirty thinking will not be taken from you. You can play with it and do with it what you will. Make a horror movie with chainsaws cutting off people's head in Hollywood. Fine, that's what you want to do. Because there's actually no problem. But if you want to have the miracle that leads back to perfect happiness and true sharing and true loving, then you must purify from loss, lack, fear, guilt, separation. These are things that you hold too dear. You're addicted to them. You think those are your ways to some sick, twisted happiness. You must learn to let them go. Honestly. So that's why Ross Red is just, you know, potent. Michaeline, I got your mute. Would you read for us paragraph 3?
Okay. Can get back there.
593.
I have a big thing in here.
Luann, you're next with paragraph 4.
Here it is.
My book.
Okay.
You got your book? Okay.
I packed it and I can't find it.
Okay.
Oh my God, that's so sad.
All right. Paragraph 3. Always in sickness does the Son of God attempt to make himself his cause and not allow himself to be his Father's Son. For this impossible desire, he does not believe that he is love's effect and must be cause because of what he is. The cause of healing is the only cause of everything. It has but one effect. And in that recognition, causelessness is given no effects, and none is seen. A mind within a body in a world of other bodies, each with separate minds, are your creations. You, the other mind, creating with effects unlike yourself. And as their father, you must be like them.
Okay, that's a very powerful paragraph. that goes into a different level of teaching than we're going to be able to discuss. But check it out, right? One day, this would be all night. This is super insightful stuff. Deborah, would you read for us paragraph 4? You'll have to unmute yourself.
Nothing at all has happened, but that you have put yourself to sleep and dreamed a dream in which you were an alien to yourself and but a part of someone else's dream. The miracle does not awaken you, but merely shows you who the dreamer is.
Read that sentence again for emphasis, folks. Here you go. This is what you're gonna get from a miracle, please.
The miracle does not awaken you, but merely shows you who the dreamer is.
You won't even be a victim to a miracle. You are so loved. You are so free. You are so much author of your dream. Please continue.
It teaches you there is a choice of dreams while you are still asleep, depending on the purpose of your dreaming. Do you wish for dreams of healing or for dreams of death? A dream is like a memory in that it pictures what you wanted shown to you.
Plain and simple. You have your book, Jason? You going to read for us?
Yeah. Sure.
Number 5.
An empty storehouse with an open door holds all your shreds of memories and dreams. Yet, if you are the dreamer, you perceive this much at least, that you have caused the dream and can accept another dream as well. But for this change in content of the dream, it must be realized that it is you who dream the dreaming that you do not want. It is but an effect that you have caused, and you will not be caused of this effect. In dreams of murder and attack, are you the victim of dying body slain? Did I say that right?
Yep.
In dreams of attack, murder and attack, are you the victim in a dying body slain? But in forgiving dreams, is no one asked to be the victim and the sufferer? These are the happy dreams, the miracle exchanges for your own. It does not ask you to make another, only that you see you made the one you would exchange for this.
He's very, very redundant to show you that it's not a slip of the word of the use, you. But by the time you get 594 pages into A Course in Miracles, you start to get the clue that there is a you that, in fact, we're 28, right? So chapter 27 is all about, you know, the dreamer figure in the dream. And so you start to realize that, wow, who exactly is the you he's addressing now? And that the answer to that question depends on who is the you you can afford you to be now. That's why I say there's different levels of teaching all along. It's the most brilliant teaching book, and it will carry you through depending on what you can handle. It's brilliant. Jacqueline, would you read for us paragraph 7? Check out this first sentence. Actually 6, huh?
6, yeah.
Okay.
This world is causeless, as is every dream that anyone has dreamed within the world. No plans are possible, and no design exists that could be found and understood. What else could be expected from a thing that has no cause? Yet if it has no cause, it has no purpose. You may cause a dream, but never will you give it real effects, for that would change its cause, and it is this you cannot do. The dreamer of a dream is not awake, but does not know he sleeps. He sees illusions of himself as sick or well, depressed or happy, but without a stable cause with guaranteed effects.
Wow. I can't wait to dive into that one day, and we can spend all night on that paragraph. Sundari.
Oh,
read for us this amazing paragraph 7. And I love that first sentence. That should be highlighted in your book.
It is.
Establishes you dream a dream and that its content is not true. This is a crucial step in dealing with illusions. No one is afraid of them when he perceives he made them up. The fear was held in place because he did not see that he was author of the dream and not a figure in the dream. He gives himself the consequences that he dreams he gave his brother. And it is but this the dream has put together and has offered him to show him that his wishes have been done. Thus does he fear his own attack, but sees it at another's hands. As victim, he is suffering from its effects, but not their cause. He authored, not his own attack, and he is innocent of what he caused. The miracle does nothing but to show him that he has done nothing. What he fears is cause without the consequences that would make it cause, and so it never was.
That would require a miracle just to have that paragraph be true. Mm-hmm. But I hope you feel the invitation by the author to say, I know this about you. If you don't know it about yourself, I know this about you. You can use my trust a little bit to receive the truth in these paragraphs. This is what he's, I hope you're getting that invitation from A Course in Miracles. Let's do, how much time do we not have? Let's just do one more paragraph. Barbara, would you do paragraph 8?
Okay. The separation started with the dream the father was deprived of his effects and powerless to keep them since he was no longer their creator.
What kind of nightmare is that? And yet, even that you can do. And you did.
Continue. In the dream, the dreamer made himself. But what he made has turned against him, taking on the role of its creator as the dreamer had.
And let me inject at this point, and one of the makings that you did, which in your dream, is time and space. And you invented time so everything wouldn't happen all at once, and space so it wouldn't all happen to you. Please continue.
Okay. And as he hated his creator, so the figures in the dream have hated him. His body is their slave, which they abuse because the motives he has given it have they adopted as their own and hate it for the vengeance it would offer them. It is their vengeance on the body which appears to prove the dreamer could not be the maker of the dream. Effect and cause are first split off and then reversed so that effect becomes a cause, the cause effect.
And then you lose sight of what's actually going on. And because you're so addicted to time and space, you begin to prove it with your beliefs in separate time, past, present, and future always comes. And you start to prove to yourself, you reverse cause and effect. Losing sight ever further as you go deeper in sleep. But you are now called to awaken. Well, this next page, we have to stop the meeting. This next page is super powerful, and paragraph 12 summarizes A Course in Miracles in a single paragraph. So I recommend you read that on your own. And if you want, bring questions next week, but it's we've pretty well covered what we're trying to describe here. Don't miss page 595. It is a true gift from Jesus. Sundari.
I think I just decided that the word because is because.
All right. Yes, you do that. You because. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for studying A Course in Miracles with me. And
Dear Lord.
If you like, you can choose to join a room and say goodbye separately. Otherwise, we'll see you next week if you just want to drop off. And I'm going to end the meeting anyway in about 5 or 6 minutes. So say what you're going to say pretty quick. Okay. Bye, guys. See you next week.
Bye.